Blog Talk Radio.
We are not alone. And a very, very wonderful vernal spring evening to everyone out there. You are listening to Contact, and this is your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark. We are very, very thrilled to be with you this evening, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime here, Mr. Wes Roberts. Good evening, Wes. How you doing?
I am very well, Leslie, and my hair has exploded, as a couple of people pointed out when I got here, so I must be relaxed.
Indeed. See, that's what being a college professor will do to you. You have so many details, so much stuff on your mind that it just blew right out of your brain and gave you quite a nice bouffant going this evening. So,
yes, thank you.
And I hope your wife appreciates it. It takes a lot of product to get that effect, usually. Anyway, we're so glad you've joined us this evening, and we are just really excited. We have a fabulous guest this evening. We are welcoming to the program for the first time Mr. Marc St-Germain, and Marc is the author of a brand new book called The Silence Keepers. We're going to be discussing that. In fact, it's going to be available, I believe, at the Alien Cosmic Expo at which Marc is speaking. So we will be talking about his new book. He is a expert on the historical ufology of the Second World War, ranging from the Battle of Los Angeles to Operation Paperclip. He is an expert in information about UFO cover-ups and global psychological warfare. So we are looking forward to our wonderful chat with Mr. Marc St-Germain. He's going to be calling in momentarily. And we are live this evening, folks. I hope a few of you had a chance to tune in to our pre-recorded interview with the Honorable Paul Hellyer, which aired last night, and Wes was facilitating, engineered that, and what a fascinating, brilliant, forward-thinking gentleman he is. He may be senior in years, but he's got the energy of a teenager, I think. He's quite a wonderful guy, and I hope you had a chance to catch that. And I did want to mention, before we get too farther along in the program, we've had some very sad news. One of our guests, someone that we really value here at Contact Radio, Archaya S., who also goes by the name D.M. Murdoch. She is the wonderfully intelligent lady who is an ethnomythologist. She's been on the show discussing the historical image of Christ and Horus and how some religious figures, such as Moses, did they really exist? Are they a combination of mythology and this and that? And our wonderful friend Archaya is facing a very, very serious health situation now, as serious as it gets. And so I would ask our listeners to either have an intention, send her healing light, whatever it is that you are comfortable with. Please send your positive vibes to Archaya S. as she begins her fight, and we're going to be with her along the way. And I believe in miracles, so I believe that she's going to beat this. So do send out those healing vibes or your intentions or whatever form you wish to send your wishes. Okay, and let's see, what else do we want to talk about? We want to thank our sponsors, of course, because without our fabulous sponsors, there would be no Contact Radio. We know that. Let's thank Euphoria, Mr. James Borg, and all of the wonderful folks in Euphoria and the Euphoria Chronicles. We thank you for your tireless support. We would like to thank Mr. Patrick White of Conspiracy Culture. He had a marvelous event here in Toronto just last weekend, so he's got all kinds of things going on. Conspiracy Culture is not only a bookstore, but it's really a resource center, an area where he can bring in all kinds of marvelous speakers. And we also wish to thank the Variety Store Productions, wonderful videographer, Greg Summer. And we thank, of course, the Canadian Hypnosis Convention and certainly the Alien Cosmic Expo. And also Enchanted Reveries Jewelry. That's enchantedreveries.etsy.com. So there you go. We thanked our sponsors. We've talked about our good friend D.M. Murdoch. And I see by my little virtual switchboard that Marc Saint-Germain is on the line, and I'm just going to pick up the phone here and begin our chat. Good evening, Marc. Is that you?
Yes. Good evening, Leslie.
Oh, I'm so pleased that you're joining us this evening on Contact. How wonderful to be able to chat with you. And how wonderful that both Wes and myself have been able to take a little advanced peek by reading the first chapter of your forthcoming book, which looks just fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. And
you
have you been
to,
this?
Have some
oh, go
more
ahead, Marc.
Information. So, excuse me.
Yes, I was just going to ask you how long have you been working on this particular book? Has it been several years or?
3 years.
Mm.
And I began, it was at the university. It was for a session project, and I decided to do a kind of structure to understand the UFO cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when everything begins there. So I had so much information that I said to myself I had to do something with that. And then I began to do some lectures in Quebec. And during those lectures, my theories were confront. So that has to push me to refine, you know, to to dig more and have to be more accurate. And so it's how my book has been constructed. So it's pretty accurate and based on documents. And some of them are taken from a website like the one of Dr. Wood, Majestic Document website.
Yes.
And I know that these documents are controversial themselves because lots of people say, oh, no, they're not real, they're fake. And at first, when I began to do my research, I just, you know, didn't look at them, at these documents. But one day when I was digging more deeper, and I got on one of them, and I didn't know it was, you know, an MG-12 document, or so I read it and say, oh, my God, that's very interesting, and it's very close to my ongoing theory, so I kept reading it, and then so it's an MG-12 document. So I got a little bit interested. And then I say, maybe that's the way they're doing, you know, disinformation, by saying those documents are not real, they're not genuine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I decide to read them all and reread them, and I began to put them, you know, chronological, how do you say that, by date.
Yes, chronologically.
And then
yeah.
I decide to construct, you know, a story based on these documents. And the story that get out of it is really, really close to the minute witnesses, like, you know, for the Roswell events, the Roswell crash.
Mm-hmm.
There are twin together.
Yes.
So that is very, very interesting at the end. So the book is written like a way it's not annoying because, but first you understand that it was written in French.
Yes, yes.
So I did a little tour this fall in France to present it.
Oh, wonderful.
And yeah, it was very well received there.
Yes.
And I was, you know, not very, very... I was surprised because people there are, I would say that the Cartesian, they're, you know, they're skeptical.
Yes, yes.
So you have to do the demonstration of the things you're talking about. You can say, you know, anything and they will believe you. You have to do the demonstration.
Yeah.
So the book was written in that way. So even skeptical will reconsider the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Yes, yes. Well, the book is, if I may say, is very scholarly and comprehensive. It really does look like a master's thesis or a doctoral thesis, you know, gone mad. You have an incredible amount of information. And before we sort of delve into the information, I just wanted to ask you personally if you yourself have had any experiences as far as sightings or any kind of encounter or anything of that nature.
Yes, I've, you know, saw flybys that were really far, but
yeah,
it was definitely UFOs because the way they were flying, it wasn't plane, it wasn't satellites, it wasn't the new orbital station.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they were not very spectacular. What gives me some interest in the field is because I got many people around me who had some incredible experience with UFOs and stuff.
Yes.
And they were talking to me about that because I think I'm open-minded person.
Yes, yes.
So because they thought that I'm not going to judge them, so they just let it out.
Yeah.
And when, you know, several person tells you the same thing and for some of them, very close encounter.
Yes.
And you have to believe that, you know.
Yes.
They are your friends. They're not going to tell you lies, so...
No, they're not lying, these people.
I got interested
very
much. And
yes,
what surprised me is that they kept that for themselves. You know, they were afraid that people tell you're crazy or...
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And so... And that's true because... lots of people, they don't talk about what they saw because they're afraid of the ridicule. And
they are.
They're
yeah.
probably right a little bit because lots of people that I know, they said when I first began to talk about it, some of their people around were telling them that like they were crazy or so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why they don't get too open.
Yeah.
So, but right now I'm a field investigator for two UFO association.
Mm.
And it's kind of interesting because people are free to, you know, tell their story without being bothered about thinking we're gonna tell them you're crazy. So
yes.
And because of that particular structure, we see new cases almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
indeed. And do you think it's I think it's not unusual, as you said, for people to first begin talking about their experiences in midlife, many people have, you know, suppressed or been fearful for all the reasons you mentioned. So I certainly noticed that in my practice as a hypnotherapist, which is primarily focused on what I would call experiencers, many people come to me in midlife, and and they have had, of course, very often, you know, lifelong experiences that they have not been able to share. So I think I have often wondered, and maybe Mark, you can maybe even help me with this. I have often wanted to collaborate or interface with a Francophone hypnotherapist in Canada who does the same kind of work that I do, because Quebec is full of sightings. Huge amounts of sightings and encounters, not only Quebec but into the eastern provinces, you know, where French is spoken, you know, the New Brunswick and such. And yes. So if you ever encounter anyone in your work who does what I do, but in a Francophone.
Actually,
sense,
I have one already.
Oh yeah.
And we've done. Hypnosis for a regression?
Yes.
It was an abduction case?
Yes.
In Quebec? I think you've done that too, no?
Oh, many. That's what I've been working on for 7 years. I've worked
yeah?
with. I couldn't tell you how many experiences
okay, so
or
you've
contactees.
Done that a lot.
Yes,
okay.
I was trained not just as a hypnotherapist, but I have several specialties, and one of them is as a regressionist. So I do a lot of that work, and I would love to interface with a colleague, you know, a Canadian colleague who works in the French language, so that we can collaborate and compare notes.
Yeah, but the problem is he doesn't talk too much English, but
mm-hmm.
I can translate for him. And we've done a case lately. It was from MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't talk too much about it because it's not closed yet. And because it's ongoing investigation, we don't have to share much information about it.
Yeah.
But it's a very case with a wealth of information because it was abduction that began when she was young,
yes.
And she had many experience after that,
yes,
and many sightings and with other witnesses,
yes.
So that make it more interesting. So, and I have other cases that are close to that, similar to it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that is interesting when people are talking about the same thing. So it's interesting because you know that they're not crazy.
they're not. And there are so many similarities, of course, having done this mm-hmm. so long, and there are so many similarities in the experiences that people have and also, you know, we know from the real-time mapping of the brain, and I've discussed this before in the air, that when people are in hypnosis or in trance and experiencing regression, that the parts of the brain that are firing are not really the creative centers so much as the deep memory centers of the brain. So what we've always known to be true is now really being validated by science. So, yes, I believe these people for sure.
Oh, that is
now,
interesting.
I was just, I love the title of your book, I must say, The Silence Keepers. Comment dit-on en français, the Silence Keepers?
Les Gardiens du Silence.
Ah, Les Gardiens du Silence. It sounds,
yeah,
somehow everything sounds better in French, doesn't it?
I don't think
Les Gardiens du Silence. And the title, of course, continues where you say evidence of the involvement of the U.S. government in the censorship of UFOs and the alien presence on Earth. Well, certainly we can all agree with that. I don't think you're going to find a lot of a lot of argument from ufologists about the parallel black ops programs that have gone on. And really, your book is very focused on what I would call the modern era of ufology, which certainly begins at the so-called Battle of Los Angeles, which actually occurred before World War II. People don't generally realize that. And were you able to find out anything interesting about the Battle of Los Angeles as far as, I know the photos, I know they've now realized that the original photos have been stolen or duplicated, and are there any living witnesses left?
I usually work more with documents than
mm-hmm.
witnesses,
uh-huh.
but I used to be lucky when I went to New Mexico, not last summer, but the summer before, and I met with Chuck Wade. I don't know if you know Chuck Wade. He's a very interesting person because I met him was like... it wasn't supposed to, but so I got lucky and met that guy, and he spoke to me like 3 or 4 hours in a row, and he told me about everything his father told him and some of the investigation he has done on first-hand witnesses. And they were almost all related to the several crashes in New Mexico.
Mm.
But that began in 1945, so it
yes.
was after the L.A. battle. And but the Los Angeles battle, the only information I got was taken from documents.
Mm-hmm.
And even these documents today, they're not considered as genuine
yeah,
to everybody.
Yeah,
so,
pretty sketchy. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you read them and you compare all the information that it's in it,
yes.
because it, you know, there's too many information that it can be invented, or you say that? It can be
manufactured or concocted,
yeah.
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there was, as I recall, there certainly before any kind of, before the military started shooting at, you know, the craft, there were a lot of sightings. I believe it passed over neighborhoods, and people did see a gigantic craft, although in the only photograph that we have from the event, which still surprises me, it's very difficult to see. You can sort of see that there's a big shape there, but it's pretty obscured by all of the primitive military firing going on.
Mm. What I do know, though, is that they had recovered something from that event,
mm.
and it was about the object that they recovered. Then they were able to go forward with the atomic bomb project,
mm-hmm.
and that is what we can learn in these documents that they're talking about a super weapon of war that can
mm-hmm.
be construct with what was recovered and so on. So, and they're talking about a celestial device, and
mm-hmm.
so you just have to you know, link the dot.
Yes,
you have a better picture. You know, because these are secret and top secret documents, and even if they're classified, they don't tell everything in it. They're you know, keeping it very hush-hush, so
yes.
even if you have access to these documents, you don't see the whole picture. That is what all about, you know, military secrets. So because I was military, I can, you know, assess the way they're dealing with the information.
Oh yes, so you would have an insight into that, certainly. The military operates in a very specific way, consistently, pretty much, I think. And certainly, when we're talking about, you know, the modern era of ufology and, you know, post Roswell crash, post the reverse engineering by the military industrial complex, I think what's fascinating is you also are speaking in your book about Project Reese. Is that correct?
Yep.
Hitler's secret weapon. Now, are we talking about Der Glock? Are you talking about the bell, or
no? It could be, but I didn't go that far. I just present the fact that the German did add access to some technologies, and they were trying to go to space.
Yeah.
And after the Second World War, when the Allies got to some underground secret facilities, they were shocked because what they saw there, it was a chance that the war was finished, because if it had, you know, like some more months, it probably would be dangerous for the Allies.
Yeah, we were very close.
Because
we
were at the edge to, you know, some big improvement related to technology.
Yes.
And
yes,
I've read about
that's true.
Glock and, you know, these form of advanced technology, but I didn't want to go too far because it's very technical, and I don't want it to be technical, you know.
I just want
to present some fact, and said, because after that, after they went to these facilities, they took stuff there, and not only they took some of the things they found there, they brought the scientists too. That was the Project Paperclip.
Oh yeah, well, Wernher von Braun and all of his buddies.
Yeah, and the only thing, you know, we know about Paperclip is the V2 rocket and the big jump they had to go to space, and then NASA and everything, but there was much more than that. There was a secret space program that was going on beside that we have never heard of, and but that's interesting. In the document date to 40s and 50s, there's a lot of information that show us that they were going there. Even if we got to the moon in 1969, I'm sure that they've done much more than that. But it was classified within military projects, so that's why we haven't heard of it.
Yeah. I have no doubt. I mean, there are trillions of dollars missing that have gone into the black ops. I have no doubt that there has been a parallel space program going way back. And that's without even talking about, you know, ancient aliens and getting into some more esoteric concepts, but just the nuts and bolts of what has gone on since World War II, since Roswell, since the reverse engineering. And now I know in your book you certainly go into great detail about what went on at various Air Force bases, Alamogordo, White Sands, Kirkland Air Force Base. Now I see a chapter here. Perhaps you can just talk a little bit about in this sub-chapter, Black Projects and Celestial Observers.
Yes, it was like the precursor. Can we say that? Is that an
yes.
English word? Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I'm lucky. it was kind of a precursor of the Roswell crash, because before that, it was, Roswell is close to White Sand Missile Range.
Yes.
That was before it was White Sand Proving Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it was close to Trinity site where they did drop the first atomic bomb, and it was close to Sandia, was close to nuclear facilities, and all this area of New Mexico was surrounded by many facilities, military facilities that were with sensitive development there. So
indeed.
The celestial observers weren't there for nothing. They were interested. But they weren't interested just because of the nuclear that was going on there. They were because my theory is it's backed on some document that said that in the in the beginning of the 40s, 1941, 42, the military had recovered some UFOs back then, but these alien civilization from who we took the UFOs probably want to know what are we doing with that.
Yeah,
and
no
probably
kidding.
Because they know we're not as advanced or as responsible as we can think we are. They didn't want us to go to the star with a nuclear weapon. So they probably were there for that reason. And they tried to, even in some documents, they're talking about kind of UFO may deviate some rocket, and the military were a little bit upset because they said it's very dangerous if they can control our nuclear device, so it's we have to get rid of them. So in a way, I think that Roswell was not an accident. They had to down them, and other document and other testimony said that they did in fact knew how to make them drop,
to destabilize them. We apparently at the time had some type of particle weapons that were not commonly known. So you're absolutely right. I think we had the technology, and they were destabilized and purposefully brought down. And certainly, I think that part of the great interest that some extraterrestrial civilizations have in us is concern over our primitive use of these sort of dirty technologies. If a culture is going to survive and they are able to have space travel and different energy sources, like Stanton Friedman says, they have to understand fusion. And so it stands to reason that many, many extraterrestrial cultures must have gone through a critical time of nuclear energy, that they somehow were able to pass through. And I think that they're very concerned about the possibility of the use of these types of weapons, which probably have far more long-range destructive capabilities than we can even imagine. Maybe nuclear weapons even affect other dimensions. I mean, we don't really know. We don't really know the extent of how damaging some of this stuff could be.
Yeah, but what I found interesting is that we can see the evolution of the military structure and the intelligence structure that is going to take care of the UFO problem. Mm-hmm. But the first problem is that they had to keep it secret. So right after Roswell, what happened is the National Security Act and then the CIA. The CIA got there. And
yep.
What was the CIA for? It was to take control of all the UFO matter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But the what I found a little bit, how can I say that? Because I don't want to get sued, you know. I don't see any movies where the CIA is involved and related to UFO.
Yeah, they sort of dance around
and,
that, don't they?
Yeah, but they are so involved, you know.
Oh, totally. In fact, you know, George,
they're involved
look at
since
the
beginning,
the
very
CIA.
Beginning, and then the NSA, and then the NRO,
yep.
But...
the NSA, and there's a great rumor that that Dick Cheney, in fact, has been very, very involved in both the Mars defense and the lunar defense programs, the Black Ops. That it really is coming directly out of the CIA. I think that's very credible. Let's see what time it's about. We're just going to take a brief pause here, Mark, and just remind our listeners out there that we are live this evening. This is Contact Radio. I'm your host, Leslie Mitchell Clark. Our co-host, Wes Roberts, is here, and we are talking to author Mark St. Germain about his upcoming book, which is just fascinating, called The Silence Keepers. Now, Wes, is there anybody on the chat line that has a question for Mark?
Well, there's folks looking in on the chat line. They don't have any questions yet, but I have a couple of questions I would ask them.
Good. Carry on.
Mark, I was just looking at your website, which is obviously en français, and I'm wondering if it will be translated one day into English, or at least parts of it.
Yes, I'm working on it since a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot to do right now because I have to. I'm not translating my book, but I have to take care of it, to revise it, to look after it, and I wrote in a French magazine that's called Top Secret, and that takes lots of my time too, and I'm. I work full time and as a project manager for a construction company. So
wow.
Very, very busy man.
You are multitasking. You are multitasking. That's you're doing many things at one time.
Yeah, I have to keep myself busy because, you know, I will find something else to do always. I'm always reading two or three books at a time and writing, and I like that. That way I have to keep my mind busy. But right now, talking English, it was a long time since I've done that, like some years.
Oh,
I was a little bit afraid. Oh my God, I will have to do an interview in English live.
No, you're great, really.
Very clear.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Let's see. And did you have another question, Wes? Yes.
I just wanted to ask Mark if, because I noticed there a reference to you being ex-military, if that has had any, negative impact on you, if the military has tried to exert any control over you, can you talk about that at all?
No. I didn't have any know anybody tried to restrain me about talking about, because when I was in the military, I didn't saw any UFOs, and I wasn't involved in anything related to that. So all the information that I share is the information that I found after when I was in as a civilian. So it's information that anybody could get after reading a lot of document, but they're available. And I didn't have any witnesses or testimony that that comes from former military, that, you know, whistleblower or stuff like that. So no, not yet. Probably because after
never.
It will
hopefully
be
never, as you say,
English,
it's all after
have
the fact.
More problem, but for now, no.
Good, good. Well, there's what is the relationship between the Canadian military and the United States military when it comes to this sort of veil of secrecy? Do we defer to the Americans? Are we in collaboration with them? Did the Canadian military get any advantage out of any reverse engineering? Or does the Canadian military have any of their own craft for which technology has been researched right here in Canada?
From what I know is that the United States had complete control over UFOs, and I don't mean they control UFOs, I mean about
the information
related to UFO. And let's say if something crashed here in Quebec, the Canadian military will have to secure the area, but then it will be the United States will have to take care of it. The same thing will happen if it's in South America or, you know, another country. It's United States take care of that. Even in France,
really?
When somebody asks a former President Sarkozy about UFOs, he says that it's the Americans take care of that, not us, even in France.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah.
So the Americans, and I'm speaking as I'm a Canadian citizen, but I was born in New York City, so speaking as an American, I guess, the Americans have completely put themselves in the position of being again the police of the world, and being in charge of any type of incident that happens happens anywhere.
Yeah, they do that with the CIA and the NSA.
Yes,
that is their UFO arms. I don't know if it's still them yet, but they were them who were involved in these ops. But now it can, you know, it has been probably changed after it would be with some more deep covered unit.
Yeah.
Because the CIA now will have to take care of the terrorists.
Yes.
They wouldn't have to deal with UFOs anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a great amount of distraction that the CIA can generate when they're, you know, when they're concocting various wars around the world to distract us. I think there's a lot of distraction and smoke and mirrors going on from what we really should be looking at, which is probably the practical application of zero-point energy and rebooting the economic system. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are under our control that as people of the planet, things that we have to see change in order to continue, you know, existing. Even Paul Hellyer thinks we have only about 10 years of being able to live with the kind of crude energy sources that we're dealing with now before we're truly and absolutely depleted. So, and I know that, in fact, in your research, you may have you may have come along, come across some information that I think was in Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, where he talked about how in the time of President Truman, we were offered by the beings, or one group of beings, we were offered practical application of zero-point energy, if you will, and it was refused. The Truman government said, "Oh no, no, we can't have that. That's going to completely throw everything into chaos." So, you know, we had in our hands a beautiful gift where everything could have been made different so very long ago.
From what I learned, I couldn't find that in the document, but I've heard that. Even Truman and Eisenhower and had some kind of second chance about the way we're going to do with the energy.
Yeah.
And because they were, you know, surrounded by people from military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
So. And they were all involved in, you know, making money with war and weapons. So
mm-hmm.
they don't want to have a peaceful and energy-free population. It's not, no, it's not good for them. And
yes.
there were people who were deciding at that time. So probably it's we. On the long term, probably they will see that it wasn't a good choice they've done
yes.
back then. But it's
yes,
never too
indeed.
Late to change.
And if it had been women making these decisions, I think it would have been a very different outcome. I think not to get into a big thing about gender equality, but I think that there's a big, you know, there's certainly a big imbalance of power in the world, and it's a very male-dominated, the power positions are still male-dominated, and I always think that if mothers, you know, we're all mothers and women, we're more deeply involved, and we're making the decisions that certainly we wouldn't have hungry children. We would, you know, people would be fed. We would have had zero-point energy years ago if women had been in the decision-making process, I think.
Yeah, in a way, it probably is. But before this book, I wrote the first one. And the first one was more of a philosophic and spiritual and esoteric one.
Oh.
And I, you know, scratch all kinds of... I start with the ancient... scripture, like you know, Sumerians and Hindu, Mayan, and because I the first one was about the origin of humanity,
mm-hmm.
of human being, and I wasn't really, you know, sure that evolution got like Darwin said. Not that I'm creationist, but you know, I'm more than how do you say that, pantheist.
You were an evolutionist, maybe?
No.
A Darwinian?
No. Neither. I don't know if you read about the Edgar Cayce.
Oh, completely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. More than, you know, that kind of thinking. And
yes.
Anyway, what I was writing in the first one is probably what we're living actually as civilization is it's like a collective karma.
Yes.
Well,
we could all be Atlanteans who have been down this road before, trying to dominate
yeah.
and using weapons and... You know, here we are again.
Yeah, probably we were the bad guys then.
Yeah, I think.
That's what I'm thinking. So we have to take what we're living actually with, you know, with a little bit, with a little philosophy, easier to live first, and then it's, you know, it's you don't judge when you think that way. You accept your, but you don't have to be passive. You doesn't mean you don't have to just wait and see. You can act. So the way I decide to do something is by digging more deeper within to understand what's happening and to share that with the more people that I can.
Indeed. And I think what a wonderful time we are living in with this combination of science and diagnostic techniques. I was just watching a program the other day on DNA and how interrelated we are culturally with how diverse people are related, pointing to different land masses that had to exist. And it's amazing that the Basque people of northern Spain, the people that have their odd language that is unrelated and they are usually red-haired, the Basque people share DNA with Indonesians. Now tell me about
that's
how
very
that
far.
Tell me how that. I mean, there had to be not only, well, I believe there was an Atlantic continent, but there also had to be a great Pacific continent in order for people in the Pacific to have received European DNA. Unless, you know, there had to be some way for people to interact. And I mean really interact. not just trading tobacco or cocaine or whatever. I mean really interact for this DNA to be then spread from the Basque region, the most unusual people on the planet who speak an unknown language unrelated to anything else. They're genetically different, being red-haired and such, and they are directly biologically, genetically related to Indonesian people.
My theory about it is still is in my first book. I don't talk about the Basque per se, but I talk about all ancient civilization that that are seen all over the world.
Yes.
And after reading a lot of ancient scripture and stuff, like the Mayan Bible, the Popol Vuh, they all talk, even the ancient Greek talk about some gods that just put them there, you know. And it says with our language, with our knowledge and science and stuff. And even the Egyptian and the Sumerian. And so probably that is one of the answers. And why
indeed.
Why is that? It's because we had some ancient catastrophic events that just, you know, flushed everybody out, and
indeed.
Then we have to put new people there.
Yes, we had to repopulate.
Yep.
And it's surprising how little it would take, really, to, you say, how could a civilization of such incredible sophistication be erased from the earth? It wouldn't take much. Look at just what happened. Look at what just happened in Tibet with this earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient temples, ancient in the extreme, now leveled. But thank goodness we have a lot of diagnostic tools. We have ground-penetrating radar. We have incredible abilities now to search the ocean areas that Edgar Cayce talked about. So I think we're living in a time of tremendous discovery that's going to validate our true origins, which have been hid from us. So we'll have to see what happens.
A time of revelations.
Yes. In a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, Mark, it is, I can't believe it, but it's almost time for us to say good night. I just want to thank you so much for joining us this evening and talking about your very exciting book. And, of course, you're going to be at the Alien Cosmic Expo, so we'll be able to meet in person and
yes.
Have a drink and hang out. So
yes,
we
I'll
will
be there.
Do so, for sure. Now, if one of our listeners would like to get in touch with you, is the best way through email?
Yep. It's
okay. And you're
my email. It's Mark. How do you say that?
A
commercial? No.
It's a hyphen, right, Mark? We have it right. You know what? We have it right here. Hold on just one sec.
And it's mark.saint-germain@live.ca.
That's right. And that will be up on our Facebook page and such in case anyone would like to get in touch with you. So thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. And I hope this is the first of many radio programs that you're doing again, because you've been a fascinating guest. And thank you for all the work that you're doing. And I really look forward to chatting with you at the Alien Cosmic Expo.
Thank you, Leslie. Good evening.
You're very welcome. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Good night. Bonne nuit.
Okay, good night.
All right. Okay, folks. And that was our wonderful guest, Mark Saint-Germain. And we were so pleased to talk about early ufology. And his book is incredibly technical and detailed. Anyone who wants to resource that period of ufology into our modern time, it's really encyclopedic. I think it's going to be a hugely successful book. So thank you, Wes, as always, for joining in on our festivities.
Yes, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure to talk with Mark, and unfortunately his first book is only in French. I think I was just reading that on the AlienCosmicExpo.com site. So maybe when he invents some more time or stretches out some time, he can tackle that one too.
Boy, I think I should really brush up on my French. This was a little bit embarrassing, right? Mm. But that's a project. That's an ongoing project. And I was just going to mention that next week, next Sunday evening, we will, of course, be all the way live. And we have Sandy Mack, who you all know. She is a very, very highly regarded Canadian UFO broadcaster. And you can always check out what she's up to at maxufonews.blogspot.ca. So next Sunday, May 3rd, we will be welcoming Sandy Mack. And then on May 10th, the following week, also live, we have Larry Campbell, who is another fascinating guest, a skilled practitioner of sacred geometry and higher dimensions of light. And you can check out what he's up to by going to messagesfromtheancients.com. Okay, so it's time for us to say goodnight, folks. And remember, we are not alone. Good night from Contact. Good night, Wes.
Good night, Leslie.